The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Ray Allen on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show. So glad we had that nearly 2-inch rainfall that would kind of sort of tiding us over, but I'm really ready now. had the big warm-up, which is required, of course, before the summer thunderstorm season begins, but traditionally it's kind of been, as I recall over the years, 30 years in town, kind of the 4th of July, adding our own thunder boomies to the fireworks situation. So that's kind of been the traditional start, I think, of the summer thunderstorm season, i.e. monsoon. The Buckmaster Show is on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. Of course, we have all of our programs available for you at buckmastershow.com. You know, I haven't read the Buckmaster Show pledge in many, many, many shows. Here it is. Listener opinions matter. 1, respect the audience. 2, forum for ideas, quality guests, and informed listeners. How about that? We started that. That was when we first started the show back in 2011. That was our show pledge, City Councilman Paul Cunningham. And the pledge is still there, and it's what we try to do every day.
Well, Bill, I appreciate you having me on, and quite frankly, it's an honor to be here because your show is done with such integrity and is very informative to the public, and I think a lot of people learn some of not necessarily inside information,
yeah,
but they get the scoop from the horse's mouth on this show, and that's a really important piece of it.
How are you? Welcome to the program. How is your summer? You're off, of course. You are a full-time teacher, along with your responsibilities representing the people of Tucson in Tucson's Ward Number 2. So what are you going to do this summer?
Well, we've been pretty busy. I already went out with the pothole crew. I didn't get as much stuff I wanted to do done, so I'm going to go back out with them again. I actually went out with Chirpa this morning, and we fixed houses. We worked on people's homes. These are people that are usually on fixed incomes, but they're homeowners. They're usually elderly or disabled. And on a lot of cases, they've had repairs done to their home, and the repair has failed within a couple days or a couple weeks in some cases, and it's an emergency. If they don't have cooling or air conditioning or a proper roof, it could be major people at risk. So I went out with the crew today, and it was an incredible experience. We answered 3 different calls and repaired cooling systems as well as roofs, and that was a pretty neat experience. Later this summer, I'll be going out on a ride along with TPD. It won't be my first one, but again, it's every summer I try to do as many jobs as I can. Recently, I also sat in the new 911 call center.
How is that?
It's coming along. We're still not fully staffed. We have a retired full bird colonel who is an expert in command and control, who has taken over that Marine colonel, actually. And he has taken over that operation. And once it's fully staffed and going, it will be operating at a very optimal level. But again, the process is slow. We are going as fast as we can, and we understand the concerns that have been raised, and we've responded accordingly. So I'm really confident of Mr. Edelman's abilities, and I really like what I see. Also, my hat's off to our 911 operators. They're part information brokers, part communication specialists, part social workers. They're just unbelievable people. And
is that a joint use for Pima County and the city?
It is a joint use between U of A PD, South Tucson PD, and TPD. The PCSO, P Mechanic Sheriff's Office, has their own communication system, but our system integrates with their system. So it isn't all just completely separate like a wall or dividing line. We'd like to take it a step further. One of the actions I'd like to see happen is possibly having some deputies work and help us with some of our calls, some of our one and two priority calls, which they already do to some respect. But with Sheriff Napier being a former TPD, I think the opportunity's there to even have more collaboration with PCSO and TPD.
What would keep a merger from happening? I mean, wouldn't it make sense to have kind of a Metro 911 system?
Yes, absolutely. I think the real question is, should we have a Metro Police Force or a Metro Public Safety District and a Metro Fire District? And those are kind of the questions that have been angling at people forever. Everybody wants to take over their territory. And my biggest challenge in this job now, as it's evolved over the last 7 years, is that our biggest challenge right now is that secession of power and secession of ego that you need from politicians, which is counterintuitive to our very nature sometimes. But
everybody wants to protect their turf,
right? And, yeah. and it doesn't really it doesn't really help us too much because I understand the turf protection and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that the guy on the street, you know, he doesn't care whether it's a county park or a city park. It's a park.
Yeah.
He doesn't care whether it's the deputy or the police department. He wants somebody to be there. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care whether it's rural, metro, or TFD. He wants somebody to be there. Yeah. And he doesn't care if it's city court or county court or federal court. It's court.
Yeah.
So we have to be responsive to that. And, you know, we're all in this region together. And with the million to 1.1 million people we have, we are all working together. We're all living together. We're all enjoying a quality of life together. We're all conserving water together, and we have to. There are definitely pieces in there. A person who lives in one area of our region compared to a person who lives in another area have different needs.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that a person who lives in Oro Valley has the same needs as a person who lives in Sarita. Similar needs, but not exactly the same. And we have to recognize that, and that's why we have these. That's why you have cities to do those municipal services, but at the same time, we've really got to take a look at some of the regional needs we have.
All right. Paul Cunningham is with us, Ward 2, a Democrat who is now in his 8th year. Is that 8 years? Yeah, 8 years on the Tucson City Council. Councilman, we had an opportunity to meet the city's new parks director. And I was very impressed with this gentleman. I believe it was last week we had him on the program to introduce him to our listeners. And we spent a half hour talking about the needs, park needs. And he's got a huge portfolio. I didn't know how many parks are in the city. There's a lot of parks.
So,
yeah.
Brent Dennis is our new superintendent of parks.
Mm-hmm.
He is a superstar. He is the equivalent. It's the equivalent of bringing, it's the equivalent of bringing the Kevin Sumlin of Parks Department directors into the Tucson fold.
Yeah, he's got a great resume.
He is an outstanding person. He's open to suggestions. He's acclimated to staff. He fit to Tucson like one of those square pegs in a square hole. Yeah. I mean, he is just a great guy.
Said he loves it here. Yeah,
and he's bold. He's fresh with ideas, and I think he's doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's new. It's new. But he immediately recognized some of our needs. And this is the big thing. We built the majority of our parks between 1970 and 1980. They are all hitting 40 years old. Even if you have the greatest maintenance package in the history of mankind, every 15 to 20 years, a park needs to be redone.
Yeah.
And we've been on survival mode for so long that we've got a lot of parks
10 to 20 years late in some of these parks.
So we have about We have $750 million, $750 million of total capital needs. Now, it's not, you know, some of those things are, well, we're going to need this in 4 years. Some of those things we needed five years ago.
Wish list stuff.
So We kind of siphoned it on down to $225 million, saying, hey, this is what Tucson deserves. We diversified it up. We're going to have a long list. It's going to tell you, just like 101 and 409, it's going to be very specific on what we're going to do. There's a little leeway built in there. Yeah. But the bottom line is we said, look, this is what kind of parks do Tucson deserve? Should we upgrade our wading pools to splash pads like everyone else is doing? Because the wading pools are from 19, you know, the wading pool guy called back in 1983. I mean, he wants his pool back. Turning it to a splash pad is not a big ticket item. It doesn't cost $5-6 million. It costs $100,000, and it creates a natural tank. It recycles water. It actually uses less water than the evaporation of a wading pool. It's a great deal. So does Tucson deserve that? Does Tucson deserve greenways and walking paths? Does Tucson deserve a more lighted baseball field? And so one of the things that's killing us is we get lots of complaints from Little League and soccer parents about the quality of the grass, and that's a very fair complaint. The problem is that if you've got baseball practicing one night, soccer practicing the next night, football practicing the next night, they're all doing games Saturday. Yeah. The only day off is Sunday, where Dave and his family go out and play Ultimate Frisbee. All of a sudden, that grass has been beaten down for 7 days, and eventually it's going to turn to dirt. Mm-hmm. We've got to be able to give our fields a rest. We don't have enough. We have more kids participating in youth sports. We have about quadruple to sinquuple the number of kids participating in youth sports than we did 20 years ago, and we have literally less fields. So do that math and see how that's working out. And so that's kind of one of the things we said, look, everybody's got a park story. Mm-hmm. Whether you're playing bridge at the Carroll West Senior Center, whether you're walking on the walking path.
Do on the track at the Udall Center, the indoor track. I mentioned that to Mr. Dennis. He said, oh, that's part of the deal. I said, what? Mm-hmm. We're going to resurface your track at the Udall Center. I mean, this guy is basically pretty new to the job. He had almost all of these action items already memorized in his head.
The crazy thing, Bill, it's like 144 action items, and
he
really
knows
does.
All of them.
Yeah, I know. I know. So, he can tell you how much they are. He can tell you what happens if we get alternative funding. He can tell you that if you have 52,000 feet exactly, you can probably get a soccer field, softball field.
He knows his stuff.
Like he's unbelievable. I've learned more from him in the 3 months I've known him about parks than I've ever learned, and I thought I knew a lot.
Wow.
So,
all right, we'll continue our discussion about parks and other things with the city, 790-2040. If you'd like to call us and talk with Paul Cunningham. Councilman, do you like bakery goods?
I think bakery goods are very underrated. They're very good.
Well, Mona's Danish Bakery is the home to the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Right now, if you're out and about, you're up in that area around Swan and Sunrise, stop in, have a sandwich, and then I suggest a brownie for dessert. The sandwich, of course, is really enhanced by that wonderful bread and wide selection of freshly baked breads. Go to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link to all of the partners that make our show possible at Mona's Danish Bakery. That's the link there, buckmastershow.com. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, we talk with Congressional District 1 Congressman Tom O'Halloran. The Friday Roundtable features Sarah Garrett Gasson, editorial page editor of the Arizona Daily Star, and Jim Ninsel, editor of the Tucson Weekly. Matt Russell with Inside Tucson Business has Weekend Watch. Buckmaster on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice. It is the Buckmaster Show. Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham is with us. Councilman represents Ward Number 2 in the city of Tucson. Fernando has called us at 790-2040. Fernando, you're on the air. You'd like to talk about parks?
Yes, sir. You know, you guys were talking about how, you know, it's really a lot of times you can't work on the parks because people are constantly using them. What about the idea of maybe closing down, let's say, a park for a month or two so that it could be worked on, maybe reseeded, you know, watered, you know, and that way, you know, gives an opportunity for it to rest. The good example that I saw is I was passing downtown and the Veinte de Agosto Park, you know, how it was closed. And I passed by there, and the grass looks great. It's
wow.
Beautiful, nice
wow.
And green. And why? Because it's been closed down.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So
good idea.
I thought, you know, like a sabbatical of sorts.
Yeah.
Like you would, you know, give the land a rest and okay. and take that time to go ahead. And so
okay.
Thank you. That's my suggestion.
Good idea. Rehabilitation of the parks. Go ahead.
And Fernando's right on. One of the things that we do is that it – we're able to shut down the parks usually in the month of July.
Right.
And so what happens is we do pretty well where come August, right after monsoon, we have a nice plush thing of grass and it slowly dilapidates over the year. Recently, we've worked on Jesse Owens Park is getting a makeover. We're probably going to stop doing some of the reseeding. I think we're overseeding. I think we're better off leaving the Bermuda thatch year-round. I think that may help us a little bit. As long as it's a healthy thatch, even when it's dormant, I think that's better. And so that's kind of why I think the overseeding piece was a little overrated. So I think that's one of the strategies we're going to use. We're doing things a little piece here and a little piece there, but there's so many different new There's so many different pieces to it that you've got to do one at a time.
Roberta would like to know, and she didn't have time to go on the air, but I have her question thanks to Ray. Councilman, is there still a farmer's market at Udall Park?
It actually got moved to Jesse Owens Park, and then it was moved to Pinnacle Peak temporarily. Mm-hmm. We want to move it back to Udall Park. One of the things that happened is that, believe it or not, there's a patent from the Federal Bureau of Land Management who land-granted land for that park many years ago. That land patent forbidded the farmer's market. It was very technical
There was a congressional link to that park. Yeah.
So the in the credit where credit is due, Martha McSally's office helped us out. Ron Barber's office started it, and Martha McSally helped us. And so we have that amendment in the record for Congress. And when there's a parks package or a municipal works, public works bill package that passes, that should be in there. That'll lift that patent and allow that will allow that farmer's market to return to Udall Park.
790-2040, 790-2040, if you would like to go on the air and give us your comment to Councilman Paul Cunningham. He would be very happy to hear from you. So $225 million bond sale will go before voters, not officially yet, but it's expected to be signed off on at the next council meeting. Do you think it has a good chance of passing?
Well, the interesting thing about this bond package is that it doesn't raise your property taxes. In fact, it stays the rates stay the same. If your assessed value goes up, you'll still pay the same rate. So I think that's a pretty neat part of it. I'm really kind of it created a big opportunity. We've managed our money. We've tried to kind of take things as they go. And this is the next step as we've done all that work with the 409 and the 101 money on the roads. We've done some work on the with the 101 money to re-equip our police department. We've actually made investments into our wages for police department. We've equipped new fire vehicles as well. And we're doing all these things. And so Parks is that other piece. Parks has kind of been neglected. We purchased some more buses. We've done all these things, and Parks has kind of been the lost stepchild. So I think that Parks is due for this. And it's really just a question of what kind of parks do the citizens of Tucson want.
You know, one of the people writing in the op-ed piece, a young person actually who went off to Phoenix, she was in college here, she had a good idea. She says, we need to work on a gateway from Speedway over to the U of A campus, really clean up that kind of that area. And I started reflecting on when I first came out here to look at the U of A in 1964 from Chicago. You know, that stretch between I-10 and the freeway, I mean, if I-10 and the U of A campus to Mountain, that has really not changed in like 40 years.
Yeah, it really hasn't.
I don't know. What could you do?
Well, I think you do block at a time. So you start with Stone. You take a look at, all right, what there's the Sofa Factory, and then there's there's Tucson, there's Pima Community College, and there's two empty lots in the park at Speedway and Stone. Then you go down a little ways, and you've got the new – well, there's some things that are changing. So they're building a shopette piece just west of Stone and the across from the Circle K there. Casa de los Niños has been rebuilt. Mm-hmm. There is some stuff changing. All the way to Campbell, we're going to have a new development on Speedway and Campbell. It's a pretty interesting project.
20 stories?
Well, it's 20 stories, but what we did is, if and that's hard to describe without being visual, but we basically took the cubic volume available to the project and took pieces out of that cubic volume and stacked it up.
Okay.
And then what the developer did was they went out and took pictures and placed in what the object would look like and did all these artist conceptions from different areas. And so it isn't going to make much of a bigger dent than the Loft or UMC. Well, the Loft used to be known as the Plaza, you know, right there on Speedway and Campbell.
Yeah,
so it's actually going to blend really well. It's going to be a live, work, play area. It's going to have walkability. It's definitely going to have appealing. It's going to be appealing to graduate students and young professionals. And we just think it's a winner, and that's why I supported it.
I only have about 2 or 3 minutes. did they hold that hearing on the Benedictine monastery yet? Wasn't there a public hearing?
There was an
informational update. We
had an informational update first. Yeah. We're probably about 5 or 6 months out from the
decision time.
They had a neighborhood. They have a neighborhood meeting tonight.
That's going to be the big meeting tonight.
There's just a lot of different questions. First of all, anybody who's seen the Benedictine Monastery, that if you look at that building and what it looks like and the architecture and all that stuff, it is a poster child for what historic preservation is all about. I mean, yeah, it's a building that you never want it to go away.
Right, I know.
So you start. I'm working from that way, and understand. I have a very. I think that it's important to do smart growth in any community, but. You can't bulldoze buildings like that.
No,
they're just not.
No.
So you start there, and then you say, okay, so what can we do out of it? And what I'm looking at is the best, you know, in my mind, what's the best option? And then what's the developer coming and proposing? And are we even in the same ballpark?
Right.
And if we are, then you got to let the developer let his architects go to work and come up with something that's going to blend it and do it right and work well. But if it's just so far off that it doesn't make sense, you got to say, hey, look, the last couple times I voted on a development or a project where I thought to myself, A, how is this guy going to make this work? How is this going to make money? Mm-hmm. How is this going to really happen? It's ended up being a disaster.
Really?
And so I just don't want to have that. If I have that feeling, I'm not going to vote for it.
Yeah. All right. We could obviously spend another half hour with you, but we have other folks who would like to be on the program and are waiting in the wings. But I do thank you, Councilman, for coming into the station because of your work schedule with school during the year. We have to do these telephonically, but when you're off in the summer, I'm glad you could come in.
It's much more pleasant to be here in person.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show. We'll take the mid-show break, and then we'll talk with Frank Riggs. Mr. Riggs, former congressman from California. He is one of the Republicans challenging Diane Douglas for the superintendent of public schools in Arizona. That's next. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Okay, welcome back. Green Things is our favorite nursery in town. We've been going there for many years. They're on 13 acres over on River Road, and they will soon be home to Zocalo. Zocalo, for years, has been at the corner of, near the corner of Country Club and Broadway with all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Right now, take advantage of a pre-moving sale at Zocalo before they move the remaining merchandise over to Green Things. Let's welcome now Frank Riggs. Mr. Riggs, former congressman, three-term California congressman, he is an Army veteran, former law enforcement officer, charter school executive, and he is now a candidate, one of five, I believe, running for the superintendent of public instruction on the Republican side in the primary, challenging the incumbent, Diane Douglas. Congressman, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Bill. Nice to join you. And you probably left out the most salient thing, though.
Tell me.
Very kind introduction, and that is that I am married to a native daughter.
Wow.
Of Arizona, my wife of 38 years. We just celebrated our 38th wedding anniversary. My wife, Kathy, who was born in Tucson because she was an Air Force brat, and her dad was stationed at Davis-Monthan.
Very good, very good. From what I was reading about that debate up at public television at Channel 8, the centerpiece seemed to be something about intelligent design. Was that your feeling, that maybe too much time was spent on that?
No, I think it was a legitimate question posed by the host and moderator, Ted Simons.
Yeah.
But it was just something picked up on by Howie Fisher, and Howie's been, as you very well know, Bill, been around the Capitol and Arizona politics a long time, and he just kind of picked, I think, on that particular issue as perhaps the most controversial that was raised during the course of the debate. But I thought it was a good debate. I thought Ted did a great job, and we covered a wide range of topics.
Why all the challenges to Diane Douglas?
Well, she has an indefensible record as the incumbent, number one. Number two, because Arizona education, K-12 education, is at a critical juncture, really a tipping point, and we can't afford four more years of a failed and ineffective incumbent. And the status quo won't do. I mean, we just learned last week that based on the state standardized test results, the so-called AZ merit test results, that 56% of Arizona third graders aren't minimally proficient in reading. And as you and our listeners very well know, reading is the foundation of all learning.
You know, and I did need to follow up, of course. We were talking about intelligent design. Well, where do you come down on that quickly, please?
Well, we need to teach the scientific theory of evolution, but there is a place for teaching of intelligent design or creationism, but it would be in our history and government classes, in the context that all great religions of the world, as you know, Bill, as a world traveler, are based on the belief in a supreme being or God, number one. Number two, our founders and the framers strongly believed in God and the creator as the endower of our unalienable rights. They put that right in the Declaration of Independence, which, of course, is the promise, and they enshrined those rights in the Constitution, which is the fulfillment of the promise made in the Declaration of Independence.
Well, we talk about, you were talking about grades. What other areas do you feel that Diane Douglas is very vulnerable?
Well, she's done a poor job of managing the Arizona Department of Education and its critical mission of administering all federal and state programs and policies for K-12 education. And then the other part of being an effective superintendent is to be able to use the office as a bully pulpit to be a credible and articulate advocate on behalf of parents and students and educators, employers, taxpayers alike. And she has really, quite honestly, marginalized herself in that role. She can't point to any single accomplishment, you know, on her watch. And there is this record of mismanagement, being unable or misallocating $90 million in federal education funds, $60 million for low-income students, $30 million for special needs students or students with learning disabilities. She has picked fights with the governor and her colleagues on the State Board of Education, and again, in the process, has marginalized herself, and frankly, she's not an effective or credible voice where it counts with the governor, with the state legislature, and certainly with the State Board of Education.
We're speaking with Frank Riggs, former California congressman, and he is running for superintendent of public instruction in Arizona. Just because you were a former California congressman, you've been in Arizona for how many years now?
16 years.
16
was
years.
Recruited to be CEO of a company in Phoenix. And I would just like our listeners to know, because someone was kind enough to say it the other day at one of our events, that the last time the federal budget was balanced was in 1997, when I served in Congress and helped balance the federal budget. And after I left Congress after three terms to keep my term limits commitment, the federal budget was balanced for four consecutive years. So, I think I was a pretty effective congressman, and I am the only candidate for superintendent of public instruction who's actually held high legislative office, has a proven voting record of supporting conservative values in education, that is to say parental school choice and local control of education.
All right, let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that's the Red for Ed movement. Was the walkout effective, in your opinion?
That is a great question. I think Red for Ed started as a legitimate, organic grassroots movement, and I'm pretty certain that the legislature would not have extended Prop 301, the sales tax, for 20 years, and the governor certainly wouldn't have proposed, and the legislature wouldn't have acted on his 20 by 2020 plan to increase teacher compensation, which I believe should be increased to pre-Great Recession levels and indexed thereafter to student enrollment growth and inflation. But here's why I part company with Red for Ed. I think it was the height of bad faith for them to vote to walk out or strike, and then to actually walk out of their classrooms after the governor had made his proposal, but before the legislature had time to act on his proposal. Mm. As a former congressman, I know that the legislative and political process takes time. And again, I think that striking or walking out of classrooms was very bad faith. And in the end, I don't think it accomplished much, because the legislature did, in fact, act exactly on the governor's proposal.
If you had been, or if you were the superintendent of public instruction, would you have advocated some kind of a discipline action for the teachers that did walk out?
Bill, if I was superintendent of public instruction, we would have increased teacher compensation long ago, because we have an acute teacher shortage. And one of the principal responsibilities of the superintendent of public instruction is to actively lead our education system in recruiting and retaining the best teachers for Arizona students. It would never have come to that. I mean, I actually, when I announced my candidacy for superintendent of public instruction, called in April of last year, in fact, I think shortly thereafter I was on your show, mm-hmm. but I called for a 20% increase in teacher compensation, because I believe teacher compensation should be benchmarked against, and our teachers should be paid competitively with, neighboring states in the Southwest region. So I like to believe the governor and maybe the legislature, saw that long ago I called for that 20% increase. And again, I would have been advocating on behalf of educators and hopefully working effectively with the state legislature, the governor, to get them the compensation that is long overdue, so it would never have come to the Red for Ed movement and the walkout or strike.
We may see a ballot initiative that would call for increased tax levels to certain income levels for money going to education. Would you be in favor of that?
I'm not in favor of that. I give the governor and the legislature a lot of credit, by the way, for acting to increase teacher compensation while still, of course, complying with the constitutional requirement of a balanced state budget and maintaining prudent reserves. But I believe that the so-called invest in ed effort is misguided. I think it would penalize the job creators and employers, and frankly, it is not. It's no more reliable a source or sustainable source of K-12 education funding than the sales tax. And frankly, what we have to do at the end of the day, and I think I can do this, having been a private sector CEO, is we've got to get the business community, you know, to step up and have more skin in the game when it comes to funding K-12 education, because they're the ones that have the most vital interest, the greatest stake, if you will, in an educated and trained workforce.
A small percentage wins in these primaries. As you know, I've been covering politics in this state for 30 years, and you get five candidates like your race, really anything can happen.
Well, thank you for reminding me of that. But I've been working hard, and I think we have a solid base of support, you know, very strong group of passionate supporters. I don't see any of the other candidates or campaigns having that kind of genuine grassroots support, number one. Number two, you know, we've been adhering, I think, to a pretty effective targeting strategy. So I think we're going to be able to turn out our voters. And I think at the end of the day, when people do their homework, they're going to see that I am by far the most experienced, qualified, and prepared candidate to be superintendent of public instruction and to lead our state's K-12 education system.
All right. Where can people find out more?
At my website, which is www.riggs4az.com, and they can certainly contact me through the website directly.
Thank you very much, Frank. It's good talking with you. Thank you, sir.
Likewise here, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Frank Riggs with us on the Buckmaster Show. Up next, Jeff Lattis, JetBlue captain. We'll be talking about the airline industry. Is there a pilot shortage? We'll talk with Jeff right after this. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for six new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in T-U-S. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, have been great sponsors of this program, great partners for several years. And we strongly recommend, if you're looking for a getaway and you want to cool off a bit, it's 15 degrees cooler in Silver City because the elevation's about anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 feet. Lots to do exploring historic Silver City. Go to southwestnewmexico.org for the great list of places to stay and things to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome JetBlue Airlines captain, Oro Valley resident, one-time CD2 candidate, Jeff Lattis, with us on the Buckmaster Show. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill. How are you?
Doing very well. Thanks for asking. I saw that article in the New York Times about a possible wave of retirements, maybe opening up positions in commercial aviation. And for years, the major airlines had their pick of military aviators like yourself. You are a highly decorated Air Force combat aviator. So what's the deal? Is there going to be a shortage? Is there a shortage?
Well, you know, there is a demand for pilots. By the way, thanks for all the flattery. But yeah, there is going to be a huge demand for pilots in the airline industry as well as in the military, by the way, because a lot of those military guys are moving into the airline world. But when you take a look at the number of retirements, there's a wave that's starting right about now, and that's going to last probably for the next 15, maybe even up to 20 years. For instance, American, within the next probably 15 years, they're going to lose half the pilots to retirement.
Wow.
On top, yeah, that's a lot. And it goes with Delta and United. As well as JetBlue, we're going to see our wave of retirements, too, come up, probably starting about 5 years. But to put even more on top of that, all the airlines are growing right now as well. So there's also a demand that's being created by just the growth of the airlines by themselves. As a matter of fact, and that's worldwide. It's not just here in the United States. Asia as well is screaming for pilots. There's a lot of American pilots that end up going to China and Vietnam to fly as well.
Do you have to retire now at this in this country at 60, at 60 or 65 for a commercial airline pilot?
It's 65 now. That law changed a few years ago, like 5, 6, 7 years ago. Now I can't remember exactly when it changed. So that kind of delayed this wave, and now it's catching up with that new law change.
What's the transition like from a military aviator to commercial ranks? And have you noticed in your career a difference between military aviator transition and those that come strictly, say, from flying schools?
Well, not exactly. Well, to answer the second part of the question, when someone goes through the civilian side to get into the major airlines, they are more accustomed to a lot of the civil flying rules that govern what we call Part 121 and 117 type flying, which is commercial airline flying. Military aviators, that even though we fall under the same regulation, we're not hauling people around, so the attention is usually on other areas of flying, obviously.
Right.
So for a military guy, you're going to have to get reacquainted with some of the rules of flying commercial airlines, which are the federal aviation regulations. When it comes down, when they get to a major airline flying a bigger airplane, and after they go through training, so the new guys that I see, whether they're military or they came out of a commuter or corporate world,
mm-hmm.
They're usually trained enough that, you know, you don't notice it a whole lot. I will say from personal experience, coming out of a fighter and going into a bigger two-pilot airplane,
right,
there are certain procedures that are hard to come over sometimes. Because, you know, the fighter guy wants to run the radios, fly the airplane, drop the gear, put the flaps up.
Do the whole
all
thing.
By himself, and that's not the way the crew concept works. So it takes a little bit of adjustment for the single-seat type guys to fly a multi-pilot airplane.
Jeff Lattice is with us, JetBlue pilot, also a CD2, former CD2 candidate. Let me ask you about unionization of the airlines. Are all commercial airliners, airline pilots, unionized? And the consumer has noticed that sometimes there are certain rules that say they've been on, the pilot and the crew has been on for a certain amount of hours. Is that vary between unions, or is that a set government thing?
As far as crew duty day and flight time limitations, that's all governed by the FAA.
Okay.
It is regulated. The unions will negotiate contracts, obviously, and not all airlines are unionized, but the vast majority are.
JetBlue? You've been involved with, I believe, negotiations with the pilots at JetBlue.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we will start voting on our first contract here in about a week or so.
Huh.
So we have gone through the negotiation. That took about 4 years, believe it or not.
Whoa.
To go through the negotiations we're in a what they call a tentative agreement where our union leadership has voted for this contract.
Uh-huh.
And it'll go to the rank and file here starting next week. We should know by the end of July whether the rank and file accept it or not. To me, it looks like a pretty good contract. I'm already convinced that I'm going to vote yes for it.
Okay. We had a question from one of our Facebook friends, Jeff, about your thoughts on the current CD2 race. You've been in those big kind of with many candidates, I believe, your own experience. I forget how many there were, but I remember that's how I first met you over at Channel 6, and I think we had a ton of candidates, and we had 1 hour, and I think everybody got about 3 minutes to say.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. So what's your feeling on this multiple field here of seven candidates?
Well, first of all, it was CD8 back then.
Oh, but, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay. It's okay. Still
that's right.
The same
CD8.
Yep. I have my favorite. I support Bruce Wheeler. He's I think, probably the most qualified and represents my values probably more than any of the others. It's interesting when you get that many people in there because there's a lot of survivor tactics, you might say, that go on. Who's going to get kicked off the
right,
island?
Exactly.
And, you know, you have certain people that are going to split votes, and, you know, you kind of have to play that game. I toyed with the idea of running in this election. It takes a lot of work. I'm kind of busy. Not only do I fly airplanes, but I also have a business here in Tucson. So out because of obligations to other parts of my life.
Right, of course. Do you want to quickly mention? You want to mention your business real quickly?
It's Elkhorn Health and Wellness Center, which is kind of right across the street from the Elkhorn Mall there on East Broadway.
Okay.
So we do many different types of health and wellness type things.
Okay.
So you can look that up on the website if you want. It's just elkhornhealth.com.
All right, Jeff Lattice, we're going to have to let you go, and I'm glad we caught you at a time in between travel. As you say, you are a very busy guy. LAX, New York City, down in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Do you get a chance?
One of these days you're going to fly on my airplane.
Yeah, normally. It's just JetBlue has not kind of been on my horizon because of, of course, you still fly in. Does JetBlue still have Phoenix service?
Yes.
Okay.
Phoenix to Boston and New York.
Okay.
I'm hoping that one of these days we'll start expanding more out to the west.
Yeah.
We do a lot of flights out of Long Beach and L.A. area, also Bay Area, Seattle, Portland.
Yeah.
But mainly our area is East Coast and Caribbean right now. Looking at going to Europe in about a year.
Yep.
It looks like we'll be going to Europe.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
We're all kind of looking forward to that.
Well, as you know, I'm an aviation buff. I love to fly, and sometimes you will post a Caribbean airport, and who's first to identify? I usually jump in and can get you the answer.
You are, and I enjoy. And you're a great travel agent, by the way.
Thank you.
Need to get the place you stayed in the Bahamas.
Oh yeah, I'll get it to you. I'll send you a message. All right, Jeff Lattice from.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Jeff, Captain with JetBlue. Jeff and I share a love of aviation and travel and all that stuff. Wake Up Tucson tomorrow morning 6 to 9, and of course Mike Check with Mike Shaw and Ray Allen this afternoon from 4 to 6. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow. Congressman Tom O'Halloran will be with us on The Buckmaster Show. Until then, on behalf of Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.